So thanks to Jack for pointing out the relationship between our Haftarah and the book of Ruth. There's another interesting relationship that exists, as was pointed out by Rabbi Yosef Yitzhak, one of the early Hasidic rabbis, that this week's parasha, Bamidbar, is read typically on the Shabbat that precedes Shavuot. I don't know if it necessarily must be so, but it is quite customarily so. And he notes an interesting parallel, that when you have an ufruf before you're married, the Shabbat before your wedding, in tradition it was the man, now it's the entire bride and groom party, that will go up and read from the Torah prior to the wedding. And Shavuot itself, the revelation of Torah, the holiday of Matan Torah, the giving of Torah, is also considered to be the wedding ceremony between God and Knesset Yisrael, between God and the sanctuary, the community of Israel. So that this is the Ufruf Parsha. This is the Parsha, the reading we do prior to our wedding as a people Israel, which lends it, at least in this understanding of the locations of the Parshiot, a very significant power. So why Bamidbar? What is the connection of this week's Parasha to our most intimate moments with God? What does the essence of a wilderness, of a desert, a Midbar, have to do with being intimate and connected with the Holy One, with the Almighty? And furthermore, this question is more broadly asked in Midrashic sources and rabbinic sources for millennia. Why a desert? Why a wilderness? What is the value of a large portion of our Torah, our sacred writ, being set in wilderness? Not just, frankly, Bamidbar, this week's Parsha and the book of Numbers, but even scenes of Moses, scenes of our sages, appear in a wilderness. And so they say in the Pesikta de Rav Kahana, one of the early collections of Midrash, and again elsewhere, it teaches us that if you don't give yourself over to the Torah, to God, to intimacy, to sanctuary, like you were a desert, if you don't let yourself be walked upon and treated as a desert, you don't merit the words of God's wisdom. I ask someone to turn that microphone off. There's a button on it. I think that's what's making the background noise. When it runs low on battery, it starts to make a background noise. So what is the nature of intimacy? What is the nature of love? What is the nature of community and sharing and holiness? I mentioned some of you, and I may have mentioned it already in a sermon I don't recall. Thank you. Nope, you had it. You had it. No. This is truly.
Low battery life is not
bad. You just.
You did that.
And you, yeah, it worked. Okay. Actually, I'm going to take a parenthetical now. It is Shabbat, but we as a community have long ago crossed the bridge of whether we as a community understand electricity to be permissible or prohibited on Shabbat. You'll notice I have a microphone. We turn on the lights when we come here. Once you use microphones that are not specifically designed for Shabbat use, you've crossed the bridge of whether you use electricity on Shabbat. And there are many ways to understand electricity as not being equivalent to fire, which was the initial prohibition in the Torah and through the sages, is to kindle or consume a fire. So electricity does not operate, in some ways it operates as fire, in some ways it's a completely different substance. So that is one understanding of how electricity works, and that's the one we have accepted as a community. So I guess my sermon's over. I have no idea where I left off. No, no, no. I'm just gonna do it without transition. There's no segue to this next point. Nobody cares. Thank you. Sorry I interrupted your naps. I know for many people this is a place to catch a Shabbat nap. But let me point out. So I was at a program at UT Haslam in training and management, an area where I lack a lot of knowledge. And one of the most interesting takeaways was that places in which positivity is the norm are not only tend to be more fun places to work, but tend to be more productive places. The correlation is very tight. So I noticed at our annual meeting, and I noticed from time to time, we can, to our detriment, focus on the negative, focus on the things that don't work, focus on the small and get lost in the weeds. And I wanted to bring you a midrash from this week's parasha, something from Numbers Rabbah, one of the great collections of midrashim, that speaks of a rich man who had a storehouse full of barrels of wine, dozens upon dozens of them. And after a time, he had not returned to his winery, his storehouse, and he went and learned that it had all turned to vinegar. And he searched through cask upon cask, and he had well over dozens of them. And he was about to leave the storehouse and close it and shutter it and give up on the whole enterprise when he found a solitary barrel of fine wine that had not yet spoiled. And he thought, this is worth as much to me as the whole storehouse. So the Holy Blessed One, says the teacher of our parable, is like this, that God, the Almighty, is like this, that God created many, many nations. In our sages' understanding, there were 70 nations that preceded the nation Israel, and didn't find pleasure in those nations, but found pleasure, great pleasure in Israel. And that's among the reason that God recounts the people of Israel at the beginning of the book of Numbers. So if God has the power to ignore all the deficits of the world, and ironically, the deficits of the world that God made, and focus on 1/70th of the nations to focus. And I would not deign to say that the other 69 nations or 70 nations are inferior, but in this telling, they are. If God can focus on the positive, all the more so ought we. And it's hard. I think it's hard in human nature. It's hard to differentiate what Nate Silver calls the signal and the noise, to know what's important to focus on, to know what complaints are valid, to understand what needs to be part of our greater mission as a human and as a congregation, and to let other smaller complaints, for example, about voicemail systems, be peripheral to the central mission of a congregation or the central mission of one's life as a teacher or surgeon or doctor or rabbi or whatever you might do, the central mission of one's life as a human, as a spirit, to sort through the dross and find the gold. But I think the parasha makes a clear point to us. Rachel, I think you said you don't enjoy Numbers very much, and I actually think it's one of the books that I love, although they're all part of my top five.
I didn't enjoy Numbers, I just said that it was very mysterious and that it confused me.
Fair enough.
Which is not a negative thing, it's neutral.
Okay, fair enough. It's, as I said, it's one of my top five. It could definitely be one of my top five books of Torah. Yeah. And I think one of the lessons that it starts out with is fascinating. It starts out with the retelling of when the census happened, where it happened, and then the census itself. And our sages make very quick understanding of that, and I think very accurate understanding, that time is of the essence, and time has its own significance. And at any day or hour or moment, it's possible to do a greatness. Another chapter of Torah could be learned, another mitzvah, another good attribute could be maintained, another good deed might be done. To quote the band Steppenwolf, and I wouldn't do this very often, it's never too late to start all over again. That we as a congregation, we as a community, we as individuals and families have the chance to focus and to reorient ourselves around the positive. I've noticed in staff meetings, if we start from what works and celebrate what's going right, you can build from what's going right to overtake what's going wrong in one's life. And there is theory both in management and personality development that you should learn to play to your weak side, that you should work on your weaknesses, that, for example, I'm a terrible artist, that for some reason I should work on sketching. But I think there's a better theory, and I can't recall where I heard it, that you should just build from your strengths. And that's what I enjoin us to do as people and an institution. There's another phrase in Pirkei Avot, Al ta'men be'atzmecha ad yom motecha, which I've cited many times, especially around this parasha. Don't believe in yourself until the day you die, which is a strange way of saying it's never too late to start all over again. You really aren't a fixed entity. You really can create the person you want to become. I'll tell a story of one of my favorite bands. I think I may have used this in a sermon, but I may not have. They existed for so long that they didn't want to get stuck in a rut, so they pretended they were other bands. They would pretend one week they were a punk band and one week they were a reggae band and write songs as if they were a reggae band and see what came out of it. And it broke them out of the shell into which they had developed and allowed them to continue to be creative even later in their career. And I thought that was a beautiful Jewish image of not believing in yourself until the day you die, that who you are is not fixed. And if you consider yourself a negative person, a curmudgeon, rough around the edges, it's not too late. One can always refocus and reorient one's life up until the day one dies and become a person of joy and positivity. And whatever the history of this congregation, positive or negative, we can start today. That's the message of Bamidbar. One can always start at the beginning of the parsha with a new life and realize that we are each beautiful, we are each full of power and containers of mystery and containers of potential. And I'll leave you with one of my favorite phrases from our sages. This is from the Beit Aharon, Aaron Perlow of Carlin, which is, to use a logic term, a tautology. It means really a self-evident statement, but it's said so beautiful that I love it. So from this image that there are a census and that there are names taken and why so many names and at the same time each name is eliminated through the course of a census, Aaron Perlow, Rev Aaron of Carlin, says that every Jew, and to wit every person, must know and think that he or she is unique in the world on one's merits, and that there never was another like him or her before in their world, for if there had already been one like him, there would have been no need for him. That's where you are. You're at the very beginning of your life today. And we as a congregation, after our annual meeting, are at the beginning of a new point. And it was beautiful to see about a half dozen or more new board members in our boardroom and to see the energy they brought and the excitement and new opinions. And life is very mutable. And it's never too late to fix your flaws and to grow and to shine.